Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to today's Three Martini Lunch. I'm Rich McFadden from Radio America in for Greg Corumbus, along with Jim Garrity from National Review Online. And Jim, today we've got some real doozies here sitting in front of us for our good, bad, and crazy martinis. Good for us, not so good for Hillary on the poll numbers so far.
Yeah, it comes from Public Policy Polling, which is a Democratic firm, but they do survey a lot of key states, and they decide to look at how candidates were doing in the state of Ohio. Obviously, if you win Ohio, you are nearly guaranteed winning the presidency. In the primary side, they saw John Kasich well ahead of everybody else, which isn't that surprising. He's governor of the state, you know, hometown boy. But the more interesting thing is in the head-to-head numbers, Hillary Clinton trails Kasich. She trails Rand Paul 44% to 41%, and almost everybody else in the GOP field is either tied with her or close. She is tied with Rubio at 44. She is ahead of Scott Walker by 1 point, 44%, 43%. Same numbers for Ted Cruz. Same numbers for Ben Carson. She's 3 points ahead of Huckabee, 3 points ahead of Christie, and 2 points ahead of Jeb Bush. You look at all that numbers, she's not above 45% in any of these things. And it kind of indicates a sign that this is despite the talk earlier in the year that she had this huge lead and the Democrats have this built-in big electoral college advantage, at least this poll, which is admittedly early, this does not appear to be the case. And in fact, depending on who's on the ticket, you know, there could be a slight Republican advantage in Ohio, which is always a nice thing to have. So obviously we don't want to read too much into this, but I think we can now kind of dispel the talk that Hillary is going to have this enormous structural advantage heading to 2016.
Are the Democrats basically curling up in a corner right now and saying, oh my God, what's going to happen?
Well, I noticed they really didn't even do much head-to-head contemplating of, you know, how does Bernie Sanders compete against the GOP field? Actually, I stand corrected. They did interview on this. And in case you're wondering, for example, if it were, say, Martin O'Malley versus Scott Walker, Walker's ahead 41% to 26%. One third of the respondents are like, who? Huh? So, yeah, I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, Lincoln Chafee, the Democratic tomato cans who are up against Hillary Clinton. Very few Ohioans know who they are, which is not all that surprising. They're aspiring footnotes in the story of 2016 at this
point. Now, Hillary really doesn't even have that great of a lead against the other Democratic candidates, does she?
No, I mean, obviously, look, this is before, you know, she starts spending about $1 billion and things like that. But look, I mean, 61% of the primary vote looks good. They threw Michael Bloomberg in there, yeah. Interestingly. And by the way, Jim Webb is at 1%. 13% Democratic voters are undecided. So obviously, she's still the heavy favorite. You might argue, though, everyone knows who she is, the name recognition, the reputation. Right. This does indicate that there are 39% of Ohio Democrats who are like, what other options do I have?
I noticed they left the Donald off of this list.
They did. You know why? Because he's too huge to fit into this poll. Huge.
Very huge. Speaking of huge, it looks like the Office of Personnel Management has a huge problem on their hands with this hacking scandal. It went from bad to oh my God.
Yeah. There's a blog called the 20 Committee. It writes about national security issues, and the author's got a bit of a background in this area. And this was, you know, the hacking of the Office of Personnel Management's internal servers. It was a minor story last week. It didn't, you know, kind of blow up and certainly wasn't it wasn't Kardashian-level news. And it turns out that, you know, his kind of analysis of this indicates that this could be extremely damaging to U.S. Intelligence. Because basically it's – remember, you know, back in the early days of the Clinton administration, there was controversy about the FBI files?
Right.
If you're handling classified information, the government looks into you. They do a background check. They dig into anything that might seem a little unusual. Everything from, do you have a gambling problem? Do you have lots of debt? All kinds of things that could be very, very embarrassing. It would be very useful for blackmail. Now, the U.S. government is collecting this so that, hey, we should know that employee X has a problem and could make them vulnerable to blackmail. Except now the bad guys have all of that information, it would seem, which is very bad. There are now even reports that some of this information may be for sale on the quote-unquote dark net, a.k.a. you know, a parts of the internet that are very hard to trace and track. Basically, this is a really useful treasure trove of information for the Chinese, presuming they are the ones behind this. And basically, just about everybody in the federal government who's got a personnel file in the Office of Personnel Management is now a potential target for blackmail or something like that. It is potentially a really disastrous scenario. Obviously, the government is very tight-lipped about this. I suppose they should be. The Snowden revelations were bad enough. Right. Throw this onto the pile, and it's been a really rough period for American intelligence.
So how much proof do we have or information do we have that, that lets us to believe that China has this information, that they were the ones behind this hack?
Well, you know, you're putting you're going a bit outside my area of expertise. I suppose if I wanted to say, well, it's in the New York Times, it should be true. I guess I should be wary about saying that in light of what I think of their coverage of, say, Marco Rubio's speeding tickets and stuff like that. But nonetheless, you know, folk, experts from places like Center of Strategic International Studies, it's well been known that China has an extensive hacking effort, efforts of cyber intrusion and things like that. So it's not – if you'd said Burundi had done this, you know, right, people would be kind of surprised. When you say China did it,
it's believable.
Not terribly surprising that they would be the ones who would have that. It's not clear whether these are the Chinese government hackers hired by the Chinese government or some sort of, you know, third party cutout. Now they're emphasizing that, you know, the intelligence agencies use a different system. So those who are coming in contact with like the CIA are not being are not believed to have been exposed for that. But, you know, any, you know, U.S. government official who's come in contact with a Chinese national on a regular basis, that sort of thing could be in there. They, you know, you could just your mind can imagine a lot of scenarios and this end up being very damaging to the national security of the United States.
There are a whole lot of scared, sweaty people in the bars on Capitol Hill this week.
I mean, there are a lot of places the federal government has stuff that they don't want the world to know. And foreign girlfriends, boyfriends, bankruptcies, debts, financial information, it's all floating around there right now.
Oh, that's crazy. All right. Well, speaking of crazy, let's hit our crazy martini. This one is like a soap opera that brings in politics and debates. It looks like a little newspaper in little New Hampshire has been able to set Fox and the Republican National Committee on their ear when it comes to debates.
Yeah, and as somebody who's been writing about this and kind of felt like the current, you know, for a long while, when they first announced it, both Fox News, which hosts the first debate August 6th, and then CNN has one, and I want to say around September 16th or 17th, somewhere around there, both said that they were limiting participation to the top 10 in the polls, and national polls, by the way, not Iowa or New Hampshire. Then CNN had announced at that time that they'd be holding a separate event for the folks who were not in the top 10. And now Fox News has said they're going to do a similar event probably earlier in the day featuring the people who aren't in the top 10. This is the option we like to call the kiddie table debate. You know, you've got the top 10 people who are the real candidates. And then we have the political equivalent of the NIT tournament for everyone who is not good enough for that top one. On the one hand, I suppose this is better than nothing. This is better than, you know, no, we're not going to let you in. You can't you're not allowed to participate. On the other hand, I think it's a little kind of, they're finding it kind of condescending. Obviously, the ratings will be lower. At this point, based on the polling right now, some big names or folks who I'm interested in would not be participating. Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana, is dragging along the bottom. Carly Fiorina, former HP executive, who a lot of people
think. And she could shake it up a bit. That would be fun to see her in there.
Well, I mean, also, how does it look to not have the one woman running participating in the top 10 debate? Like, that's pretty bad. And at least at this point, now maybe if he officially announces it'll change, but right now, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, if he just, you know, he's made an exploratory committee, he's thinking about it. At this point, if he runs, he would not be in that top 10. Now, the first debate is in Cleveland, Ohio. How'd you like to be the governor of Ohio and locked out of the first debate being held in your own state?
Oh, wow. And then the RNC, they have rules that if you participate in a non-sanctioned event, that's it, you're out for the season?
Something like that. Reince Priebus aspires to have the kind of power that Roger Goodell has. I mean, like, you could run for president, but real power is in, like, being an NFL commissioner or something like that. They felt there were too many debates last cycle, and there were something like 20, and I think that's a reasonable argument to make. And I think the other aspect is the more debates you have, the less newsworthy and interesting and consequential each debate becomes. I think they wanted to have 10 debates, which is by no means is that a small amount of presidential debates.
Right.
And they didn't, you know, but the problem is if you're one of those candidates who's dribbling along at 1-3%, you need every bit of exposure you can get. So the fear was that, you know, if you're a network who's been shut out or you don't like the deal that the RNC can give you, say, look, we're hosting a debate in Manchester on this date and anybody who wants to show up can. And if you're, you know, one of these candidates at the bottom, you kind of have to. Like, you can't turn down opportunities to be on TV. So the RNC was going to say, look, if you start doing that, if you start doing these little rogue debates, these, you know, like the black market presidential debate market floating around out there, we can dock you delegates. And that's the one power the RNC has, is to enforce who gets what delegates and to penalize people for not playing by the rules. There obviously were a bunch of people who were not necessarily comfortable with that. On the other hand, they are trying to enforce some sort of order and structure on a process that a lot of people had become had gotten too chaotic and ultimately not really in the best interest of the party.
If you are locked out of these debates, is it over for you?
I don't want to say with 100% certainty, you know, stranger things have happened, but it does make it a lot tougher because, one, you're not up on that stage. I mean, I'm thinking, like, do you buy commercial time? And during the commercial breaks, you run and say, if I were on stage right now,
that
I would say.
That would be awesome.
You know, but again, like the part of the other big part of it is if you are 11th place right now, you've got a really steep road ahead. And my friend and you know, fellow blogger Ace of Spades made the point out that, look, if you're not on that first debate stage, fairly or not, people are going to accuse you of being fringe. You may not be fringe. I don't think John Kasich or Bobby Jindal or Carly Fiorina really are all that fringe. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, huge Donald Trump earlier. Donald Trump right now, I think, is like eighth or ninth. So he's up on that stage.
Oh.
Rick Perry right now is on the bubble. He's the guy who has to worry about a, you know, a Fiorina surge or a, you know, Jindal or you know, I'm also, you know, Pataki and Lindsey Graham are also in that, you know, not quite. Not ready for primetime players, you might say.
Well, that ruins my dream because I would have loved to have seen the top 10 up on stage and Donald Trump buying every single commercial break and just busting the other ones up during every single break. And that would be just fabulous.
That would have been entertaining. The other option I just kind of think is at some point, someone might just rappel down from the ceiling in the middle. You know, you thought you could keep me out, but you didn't. You didn't, you know, you didn't watch the roof. Now, did you?
Yeah,
you
like
know?
Howard Stern.
Or just smashing through the wall like the high C-man.
That'd be great. All right, so there's your crazy martini of the day, and all three of them are available at National Review Online. And that's it for today's martini. I am Rich McFadden in for Greg Corumbus in Radio America, and that's Jim Garrity from National Review. And catch us again tomorrow for the Three Martini Lunch.